everybody. We have a very special treat that's all the same to you, but it's a special treat for us here in the studio. We're Zooming with Peter Lynham today. Professor Emeritus Peter Lynham, as I said, you're at a slight disadvantage in that you cannot see us, but we can see you in the studio today, and it's a real treat. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Oh, yep. Thank you for making that. Thank you. You know, we got a little workaround. No phone today, but we can Zoom you. And so thanks for making the time and jumping on. What on earth are we talking about, or not on earth? What on earth or otherwise are we talking about today?
On Saturday, I had the privilege of going to. There's an echo for me. Is there one for you?
There is not. Have you got headphones?
I'll just carry to. So I went to the fascinating event, which was the Baha'i celebration of 100 years in Auckland.
Wow.
And indeed in New Zealand.
Well, fantastic. I weirdly haven't thought about the Baha'i faith for a long time. And on Saturday, we drove out to Te Henga and drove past the road that has the Baha'i temple on it. I don't know if this is where you were at, but...
No, we were at a very tiny... far from it. This is causing me some difficulty.
Okay, sorry.
Look, I think I've got my phone working.
Oh, okay.
Find my phone number.
Look. Okay, let's try you. Okay, I will tell you what. We'll play a quick song and we'll be back... with Peter. Does that work for you, Peter? We'll do that. Okay.
Hopefully it does.
All right. Well, we'll give Peter a call off here, and I'll crank through the song, and then we will be back with Peter Lynham.
95 BFM presents Wednesday at the Hollywood Avondale, Sunday, May 24th.
Grocery store sushi.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is Wednesday, a song called Bitter Every Day, and they are playing this Sunday. Wednesday is on Sunday at the Hollywood Avondale, and it's going to be a jam-packed show, but you've still got a chance to buy a ticket, so hurry, hurry. And I had a quick text from someone saying, who's this track by One of These Days? It's Johnny, J-U-N-N-Y, on Sun Return Records. I set out for the day, but OOTD, of course, is One of These Days. Anyway, let's try this again. All right, we're going to fade that right out. Peter, back. We're back. And are we in action?
That sounds good.
Okay, good. All right, well, we've got to see your face briefly, but we were talking about an event that you went to, which was a celebration of 100 years of the Baha'i faith in New Zealand.
And so it was held in at the top of the Auckland Museum. I don't know whether you've been up to that spot, but It is a phenomenal site with views all over the city.
Wow.
And so it's quite a magnificent place for them to celebrate their centennial there. And I was really fascinated and knew immediately this was the subject for today, because the Baha'i are a mighty interesting group. I mean, in some ways, they are a split from Shia Muslim.
Right.
Because they come from Iran. And indeed, the terrible experiences that they had in Iran and still have in Iran are directly related to the fact that in the Shia view, they are a heresy, a heretical breakaway from Shia Islam. And as you know, Shia tends not to be very tolerant.
Yeah, no, you stick with the family, yeah.
Now, they very quickly, you see, they began with a person called Babab. I'm not sure I'm saying that correctly, but my Persian isn't great. And Babab really technically was not Baha'i at all. He had founded his own movement, but he was killed by the Persians in 1853, I think I've got my date right, and then succeeded by the Baha'u'llah, who is generally regarded as the major founder of Baha'i, even though they look back to the Bab. And so Baha'u'llah had some difficult experiences, and he fled from Iran to Iraq, to Baghdad. And there, he was, in those days, in the 1860s to the 1880s, in the territories of the Ottoman Empire, Turkey-based. And eventually, because he was kept in prison there, he found a way to achieve a degree of freedom by going to the edge of Palestine, of course, of pre-Israel days.
Mm-hmm.
And he managed to get the Bab's remains to Haifa in Israel. And that's where they're kind of their headquarters are today. So they have a universal house of justice, which flashed on the screens at Auckland Museum innumerable times.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a nine-facing temple. Nine seems to be a most important number for Baha'i, because their temples are nine. Their symbol is a funny-shaped, I think it is a nine-shaped kind of flower.
Right.
Petaled flower. And the other magical name seems to be 19, because they've invented a year with 19 months of 19 days, plus a few left over which have to be filled in every year. the story that they were commemorating was the formation or the election of the first nine members of their spiritual assembly, which is the governing body, and you can't be an official Baha'i group if you haven't elected nine people to be your spiritual assembly.
Right.
And so internationally there's nine, New Zealand overall there's nine, and in Auckland there are nine that fulfill this role of governing the body. They're not clergy, they're just elected members, and they stood up in front of us and looked at the usual assortment of different people. The fascinating thing was that we were given much talk about Baha'i teaching, although it was only about an hour long, the event. the essential teaching was of the oneness of humanity, and that diversity can be strength, not weakness, so long as we rejoice in that diversity. And this is a wonderful message, of course. And Baha'i tend to have quite a high profile in interfaith activities, because they believe, after all, they've come through the monotheistic tradition of Islam, Judaism, Christianity. So they tend to fit very well in that context. They see the Baha'u'llah as the final manifestation. Of course, everybody does see their own leader as the final manifestation of the divine. The divine who is, to them, essentially unknowable other than through the sight given by the Baha'u'llah. So, fascinatingly, we weren't told this on Saturday night. All we were told about was Margaret Stevenson, who was a woman. I know her story fairly well, because I had a part to play in it, getting into the Dictionary Museum biography. Margaret Stevenson had, through various influences in Britain, people writing to her, founded a discussion group in Parnell back from about 1920.
Yeah.
And then from 1926, she managed to find nine people who could be elected as a spiritual assembly. But on the Baha'ipedia, which is their version of Wikipedia,
yeah,
it is very intriguing that they claim that one of their converts was Robert Falcon. Now, Robert Falcon...
It's a cool name.
A great name. Robert Falcon is the notorious figure for the formation in Havelock North of the so-called Havelock Work, which sought to assemble, and I think I've talked on this.
You have, yeah, you have mentioned about them.
He founded this Egyptian rite of the sun, studied Isis. So what that tends to show us is that people interested in all different religions dabbled a little bit in Baha'i as much as anything.
Yeah, I suspect there's some dabbling going on. I'm looking at a little list of notable musicians who had said they were part of the Baha'i faith, and a lot of jazz musicians, musicians, and I wondered if there was some, you know, if it have kind of rippled through the jazz community, because a huge amount of the sort of celebrity, I guess. You know,
Baha'i has certainly in the 1970s, there was a great surge of interest in Baha'i. And the particular reason for the surge, I think, was that it was at a stage when people were losing interest in their inherited religion, Christianity, by and large.
Mm.
And Baha'i offered itself as an attractive, non-hierarchical type of religion, in which everybody had equal significance. And so there was the list that I can see in front of me is certainly of people who became interested in the 70s and the 80s. Not so much in the present day. Indeed, in modern Baha'i in New Zealand, there's a significant number of people who fled from Iran. So there's a lot of Iranians persecuted in Iran who found their way to New Zealand, as to many other nations.
Rainn Wilson from The Office, The American Office, there you go. Dwayne from The American Office is the most famous living person I can see flying the flag. But I don't think he's... Yeah, he's a pretty standalone name in the kind of, you know, it's not a trendy American religion.
No. Although it does have, it's probably most beautiful temple. It's a beautiful nine-sided temple in Illinois.
Oh, really?
So Haifa in Israel, Illinois, and then in India, you will see the picture on the Wikipedia page anyway of this extraordinary lotus petal-shaped Baha'i temple, phenomenally beautiful. And the essence of these nine-sided temples is, what I can't find out is what goes on in their worship, and I had meant to sort this out, but mostly, I think, it is learning about this way of peace and unity and oneness.
Yeah.
And I think that for many people, its lack of content was an attraction in some ways.
Right. Yeah, I see what you mean. Yeah, like a cynical person might sort of say it's, you know, peace, love and happiness and kind of don't need to know much else. But then on the other hand, it actually might be quite lovely.
Yeah, and I think for people who've grown tired of religions that are full of dogmas, here's one that you can duck the dogma, although actually, as far as I can see, there is most definitely dogma there. It will be interesting to do a study, and I could do a study because I've got the data. You know, I'm a data-hungry person. of the educational level of Baha'i. And I think what we'd find is it's pretty high, that Baha'i people have quite an interest in an academic study.
Yeah, right.
And that kind of makes sense, that this is a religion where people who've grown wise to all religions but really are losing interest in ones that ask them to believe too much.
Yeah, they want a little bit of something, but they don't want to give up their...
And especially the non-clergy focus of Baha'i. Imagine where people have come through Islam, especially Shiite Islam, where, as we well know, there sure is a hierarchy and authority there. And so Baha'i, as a schism from Shiite Islam, certainly would have attracted people because of the possibility of abandoning this dreadful degree of coercion that goes on within Shiite Islam. And so I think that's a very significant part. But I think also the fact that they didn't really organize their scriptures until 1920, so it's a very recent movement, remember, and that there's no attempt to give you out a copy of the scriptures. We got two booklets on Saturday night. One was Baha'u'llah, the Divine Educator, which emphasizes especially what Baha'is do. So it's the doing that is what is their focus. And
I like that in a religion.
Yeah. So one of the things that happened was that they presented 100 acts of service that they proposed to do to the city of Auckland. They presented it to Desley Simpson, the deputy mayor of Auckland. 100 commitments that they've made of actions in the coming year.
Anything that we should be looking forward to?
Yes. Unfortunately, I'm just hoping the list would have been in these booklets, but it isn't, so I can't pull out any particular one that they're going to do.
Oh, well, it'll be a nice surprise anyway. And besides, they're probably not doing it for the BFM big ups. They're probably doing it because
that's... Probably not. Although, I might say, many of the sweet and the good were there on Saturday night. Because one thing Baha'i has carefully cultivated is friendly relations with people from other religions. And so there was any number of people I knew from Islam.
Across the aisle.
From, you know, all varieties of Christianity, from a host of other positions. And so the interfaith aspect of Baha'i is pretty significant.
Yeah. Oh, well, that sounds like a good night and a good opportunity to the top of the museum,
except
if nothing.
I have to tell you, they do not approve of alcohol, so there was just orange and apple juice.
Okay.
And at the end, small nibbles.
Yeah, right. Well, I did wonder, because someone just texted in saying that Louis Armstrong was Baha'i, and I could see that Flora Purim and Dizzy Gillespie and a whole bunch of other Cindy Blackman, other jazz musicians from an era where, and I wondered if there was a permissive nature to it that kind of led to, like, you know, musicians
being
involved.
I don't think so, because they seem to firmly disapprove of gay people.
Okay. Mm. Okay. Well, you're
the only type of sex is within a heterosexual marriage, so far as I was able to read.
Right. Well, it's starting to sound less ideal the more we arrive at the twists.
Well, but then that was a discovery in the 19th century. Possibly they've had a new revelation.
You'd hope so.
Yes.
People as people.
In the Bahá'í, now let me have a look. It forbids any sexual acts outside of marriage, and a Bahá'í marriage must be between people of different sexes. Yeah, that doesn't leave much wiggle room, does it?
Literally.
yes.
Well, we might leave it at that. I think nice enough, but I'm not going to give them a 10 out of 10, especially deducting some major points. Thanks to that last little bit of information, but hey, I'm not in charge, so we're purely telling it like it is, aren't we, Peter?
Very good.
All right, thank you very much. Talk to you very soon next week.
Okay.
Bye bye.
Bye.
Did you hear that? I said bye. I was really the whole time I was like, my little brain was going, you should try and do a joke about the Baha'i men, like when I was looking for the musicians, the Baha'i men who let the dogma out. But the joke wasn't good enough, and also you're not supposed to joke about things like that, so I didn't do it.
Oh.
Harry, what the heck have we got coming up?